Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated October 20th, 2015. We'll begin today's reading with an article about city politics, and this is called Aldi Rezoning Rejected. It was written by Allison Petty. The Decatur City Council on Monday narrowly voted against rezoning an area that would have been the site of a new Aldi store on the city's north side. A 4-3 vote came as a relief to more than 100 residents who filled the Decatur Civic Center Theater for the council meeting, which lasted more than 3 hours. Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe cautioned the residents that the site near the intersection of West Ash Avenue and U.S. Business 51 would continue to be a target for developers because of its high visibility and traffic count. In announcing her support for the rezoning, Moore Wolfe cited the city's strained financial position, which would be worsened by the loss of sales tax dollars if the company opens its new store in Forsyth instead. "My big concern is for the future. We've got some pretty dire numbers coming at us as far as expenses versus what revenues we're bringing in," she said. "I don't think it would be responsible of me to say I could vote no for this project, primarily because of our fiduciary responsibility." Ed Flynn, a local attorney representing the developers, told the council that the Aldi store on Pershing Road brings $84,000 in sales tax annually. The company planned to close that store and build one that is 3,000 square feet larger on the new site. The new store was estimated to bring in $120,000 in sales tax annually, Flynn said. It would also generate increased property tax revenues for the city, the Decatur School District, and Decatur Park District. Aldi representatives have said that the company wants to locate along U.S. Business 51 on the city's north side, and Forsyth officials have expressed interest in attracting the store. "To foreclose this development is a shot in the foot in regard to the economic issues we're facing," Flynn said. "But in the end, neighbors' concerns about traffic, safety, quality of life, and property values proved compelling to the majority of council members. Our homes will definitely go down in value, which means less tax money for the city. This will also make our homes harder to sell in the future, if ever," said Julie Bresnan, whose house is across the street from the proposed site. "Our own safety will come into play every time we try to leave or return to our homes. We will no longer be able to walk or ride bikes down our sidewalk for fear of being hit. I want what every other homeowner wants and deserves, and that is a safe neighborhood to live in." Council members Jerry Dawson, Bill Faber, Lisa Gregory, and Pat McDaniel voted against the rezoning. Dawson, who used to live in the affected neighborhood, said the vote was the toughest one he had taken in 6 years. "In the end, he said it came down to safety. Nobody lets their kids play on ash. I know what it's like. It's a racetrack. That's a lot of people's fault, and it's nobody's fault. Until somebody brings me plans that would alleviate creating a bigger problem than what we already have, I just cannot support this development." Faber thanked residents of the neighborhood for speaking to him about the issues over the past few months. The neighbors have convinced me that the proposed Aldi project would commit commercial vandalism out of an exceptional neighborhood, he said. Gregory acknowledged that the city will face difficult budget decisions over the next few months, but she said the economic ramifications did not outweigh the environmental and social aspects. She added that she did not want the vote to be construed as anti-business. It really is going to take all of us working together in a very strategic, sustainable economic method to make Decatur be a greater Decatur, she said. McDaniel said council members have a responsibility for economic development. We also have a responsibility to the quality of life of our citizens, he said. Because if we didn't have the citizens, we wouldn't have to worry about economic development. Moore Wolf was joined in her yes vote by Councilman Chris Funk and Councilwoman Dana Ray, although Ray said she had concerns about traffic that would have prevented her from approving site plans unless they were addressed. I know sometimes you have to look at the common good of the entire community and not just one individual or one segment, Ray said, adding that she had gone back and forth on her position. Funk said he and his wife decided against buying a house on Ash Avenue in 2002 because of the high traffic. I empathize. I saw it. We have kids. I hear what people are saying about the kids not playing in the front yard, he said. But that's not a change that is going to happen today. That happened a long time ago. He pointed out that the Decatur Plan Commission had recommended the rezoning and said developers would not spend millions of dollars to build a new store in a location where disastrous traffic would make it fail. After the vote, resident Alan Elsass thanked the council members and asked if there was a way to protect the neighborhood from future attempts at rezoning. I'm hurt by this. I've only lived there for 2 years, but if I put my money into a house and expect it to mean something, I depend on the zoning for the foundation of my family, he said. Is there some way we can say, until the year 2040, that's 25 years, nobody will enter this box and remove the residential zoning from any property there? In a statement released after the meeting, Aldi's director of real estate, Mike Roche, said the company had been part of the Decatur community for 24 years and was committed to its customers, employees, and neighborhoods. We are disappointed by the City Council's decision, and we plan to evaluate our options in an effort to identify the best solution for our customers and our business, he said. We'll take a look now at news that comes from Millikan University. The headline is, Millikan Dorm Fight Yields Arrests, Injury. And this was written by Tony Reed. A fight inside a residence hall at Millikan University on Sunday night resulted in several arrests and one man suffering a broken nose. Sworn police statements alleged the trouble started about 10 p.m. at Aston Hall when a 19-year-old woman got into a heated argument with her roommates. A boyfriend of one of the roommates tried to intervene to separate the arguing women, and this resulted in the 19-year-old turning her fury on him, police claim. When the boyfriend tried to leave, he was allegedly attacked by the female suspect and two female accomplices, who began pushing him and blocking him from leaving. When the boyfriend tried to push them away in turn, the woman suspect claimed she had been punched in the face. She then allegedly made a call to a male friend to have him come over and join the fight. When this 19-year-old man arrived a short time later, accompanied by two other men, he is accused of punching the boyfriend in the face, knocking him to the ground. Then the boyfriend and the boyfriend's brother, who was with him, were attacked by all three men and all three women, according to police. The boyfriend's brother fled upstairs to his own apartment, but was pursued by the 19-year-old man and three other male suspects who broke the door open. It is then alleged that they attacked both the brother and his roommate, who was inside, hitting them with their fists and a skateboard. The sworn statements allege the roommate was pinned to the floor, quote, in a chokehold and punched in the face, while another unidentified suspect struck him in the legs with a skateboard. That is the end of the quote. The roommate sustained a broken nose, which required hospital treatment. The 19-year-old woman, who is described by police as instigating the violence, was arrested on a charge of mob action. She remained in the Macon County Jail on Monday night in lieu of posting $7,500 bond. Her 19-year-old male friend also remained jailed Monday night on charges of battery, mob action, and home invasion. His bail is set at $2,500. Next, we'll read an article about Mount Zion's government, and this is called Mount Zion Backs New Beltway Route. This was written by Ryan Voiles. With what some members referred to as a lose-lose scenario, the Mount Zion Village Board approved an alternate alignment for the Macon County South and East Beltway. After a second meeting of discussion, the board voted 6-0, with Trustee Shane Mendenhall voting present, to send a recommendation to the Illinois Department of Transportation and the Federal Highway Administration on a route slightly farther north than the current alignment that would go through the southern segment north of Sulphur Spring Road. Trustee Kevin Fritzy said neither choice was ideal, but felt the alternative was better to protect investments already made in the area of the current alignment. In addition, he hoped setting the location would eliminate hesitation from those near the proposed beltway who are not sure whether to develop their properties. The sooner we can get all parties on the same page, the better for the village, he said. The federal and state agencies approved a recommended route for the beltway a little more than a year ago on the southern segment north of Sulphur Spring Road, which would cut through annexed areas of the village, including the Silverleaf Estates subdivision. The village had invested about $500,000 in the area for southern infrastructure development. The alternative route is similar in scope to the current alignment, as both would consist of 3.3 miles of road at an estimated cost of $28 million. The alternate route would not relocate any residential or commercial properties, while the current alignment would force the relocation of one residence. The alignment that had been preferred by board members, which was rejected by the state and federal agencies, would move the beltway to the far southern part of the village, near Craft Road. The alternate alignment would cover 4.7 miles and cost an estimated $40 million, but was deemed non-viable because traffic studies suggested the location would not generate enough users. Two other alternatives were briefly considered, though Village Administrator Julie Miller said DOT, Department of Transportation, and federal officials had informally told her the two would likely be rejected due to environmental impact. With Monday night's board approval, the alignment recommendation will now head to state and federal officials, who have 6 weeks to accept or reject the village's recommendation. If approved, DOT would still need to conduct studies before it can get approval for development. Let's listen now to an article that is featured, and the headline is Spooky Crafts Taught in Class. This was written by Allison Petty, and the dateline is Decatur. The spirit of Halloween came early and cutely to Johns Hill Center on Monday. Six preschool-age children traced their hands on orange construction paper to make hair for a witch they assembled and decorated. Then they affixed bandages, masking tape, two mummies cut from black construction paper, and played a game that required walking the lines of a spider web. After all that work, they were rewarded with a cup of candy corn and a juice box, cleverly disguised as a ghost. The activities are geared toward helping the children, with assistance from a parent or other adult, develop motor and socialization skills, said Danita Deffenbaugh, recreation supervisor for the Decatur Park District. I always try to really encourage waiting our turn and sharing, she said. I think those are things that if they learn early, then once they get to school, they'll be ready. They'll already have those down. This fall, the Park District began offering the classes for preschool-age children on a one-time basis, rather than having parents pay $30 for a six-week session. Some parents found those commitments were too difficult, Deffenbaugh said. Now, each class costs $5 for residents or $7 for non-residents. Parents who let Deffenbaugh know of a conflict ahead of time can get a refund or transfer their registration to a different class, she said. Monday's session of Calendar Kids was a hit with friends Nora Penganaban, 2.5, and Adelaide Winnick, 3. Nora already told mom Jennifer Penganaban that she wanted to come back again. And since she's an only child, Penganaban is always looking for good opportunities for Nora to be around other kids. This is a great one, she said. It was so reasonable, the cost for everything they're doing. Adelaide has siblings of varying ages, including baby brother Atticus, who slept quietly during the class. It's just kind of nice to do something for her age group, said Mom Beth Winnick. To find out more about the Park District's preschool activities, visit Decatur Park District's, that's Decatur-parks.org, or call the Decatur Indoor Sports Center at 429-3472. On the opinions page, this is the editor's pick, or an editor's pick. The headline is, Criminals Should Keep the Felon Tag. Former Illinois governor and felon George Ryan wants legislation to have the word felon dropped from those released from prison. Ryan made his plea during a speech last week before the Council to Reduce Recidivism annual luncheon held in Waukegan. Ryan, 81, spent more than 5 years in federal prison on corruption charges. He said during his stay at a Terre Haute, Indiana federal prison, he saw many young men who have to wear the felon tag once they are released from prison. They've served their time, and that tag ought to be removed for the rest of their lives by law, he said. Ryan has always been a complex person to categorize. He was convicted in 2006 of racketeering, conspiracy, tax fraud, and making false statements to the FBI. In many ways, he put business with state government up for sale. He was convicted of steering state business to insiders in exchange for vacations and gifts. He was also accused of stopping an investigation into Secretary of State employees accepting bribes for truck drivers' licenses. The accusations and trial showed an elected official who seemingly had come to believe that he had earned the right to use his office for his own benefit. However, he was also a Republican governor that found a way to work with a Democratic legislature and is easily the most effective governor in the last 15 years. Once a supporter of capital punishment in 2003, he deemed Illinois' capital punishment laws flawed and emptied death row. That led to the state abolishing the death penalty in 2011. His latest proposal is also complicated. Ryan didn't state how legislation would remove the word felon from a person's record, and he didn't address the public's right to know about criminal records. Ryan certainly doesn't believe any such legislation would benefit him personally. However, criminals who have served their time do have a hard time assimilating back into civilian life. Jobs can be difficult to find, especially in tighter job markets. There is little doubt that employers are reluctant to hire felons, often with good reasons that include the safety of fellow employees and customers. Plus, a record is one of the punishments criminals have to live with. At the same time, if a released prisoner can't find a job, it can be difficult to avoid falling back into a life of crime. The state's recidivism rate is just above 50%, which is higher than the national average. Ryan's comments raised a few eyebrows, but didn't draw much attention. Although his idea may be a noble one, it's hard to imagine a way that the public wouldn't want to know about a criminal's past. We'll find out now what Dr. Keith Roach has to say to writers who have asked his advice. Dear Dr. Roach, I have arthritis in my hands and knees. For at least 3 years, I took ibuprofen, about 1,200 milligrams daily. Then 2 years ago, I switched to a natural healthcare product derived from turmeric. It works just as well for me as the ibuprofen and no side effects, I think. What are your thoughts about this? And here is his answer. Curcumin, the active chemical in the spice turmeric, has several potential uses. I wrote some months ago about its possible use in inflammatory bowel disease, but I was able to find several studies showing benefit in people with both osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. The usual dose was 500 milligrams, 2 or 3 times daily. There were few side effects in the studies, but there is the potential to worsen bleeding in people taking anticoagulants, such as warfarin. Curcumin seems a reasonable alternative to anti-inflammatories in people with arthritis, and it might be worth a trial, especially in people who experience side effects on the standard drugs. As always, finding a high-quality product is essential, since supplements are largely unregulated. Dear Abby has these letters in her column. Dear Abby, my wife and I have been married 16 years. We have 3 boys, ages 12, 6, and 2. My 6-year-old doesn't sleep in his bed. He sleeps on the couch. My wife sleeps in a recliner in the den. The 2-year-old usually sleeps with her. Sometimes he sleeps in a crib in our room. I sleep by myself in a king-size bed. There is no possibility for romance. The only time there can be is when my wife comes to bed. If this happens, I know something is going to take place, but I have no chance to initiate. Our sex life is totally up to her. Once a month or so is fine with her, but not for me. I have told her how I feel about our sleeping arrangements, but nothing has changed. I know I snore, but she has not complained about it keeping her awake or used it as an excuse. Our 6-year-old will not sleep in his bed as long as his mother sleeps in the recliner. The longer this goes on, the harder it will be to get him into his bed. Do you have any advice on what I should do or say about this situation? And the letter is signed, Sleeping Solo in the South. Dear Sleeping Solo, obviously this arrangement isn't working for you. Unless you want to live the rest of your life this way, you are complaining to the wrong woman. Your wife is doing the children no favors by allowing these unorthodox sleeping arrangements. It's time to lay your cards on the table with her. Tell her you need some straight answers about why she's unwilling to share your bed. But if her answers are not forthcoming, marriage counseling may be necessary to improve your level of communication. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the October 20th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.